Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal. I am so excited you are ready to throw away the old playbook and reimagine how you can build relationships with your customers. And we have an incredible guest for you today. I'm so excited to welcome to the show, Kristen. Kristen, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the show today. I'm excited.
Yeah, I can't wait for this conversation because you and I've had a chance. We've actually gotten to meet in person, which is kind of wild in this, you know, remote first work world. But our conversation was pretty short. We were just kind of like meeting each other for the first time. So what I really want to hear is, what is your origin story? How did you get to be the incredible thought leader that you are?
Well, it depends on how far back you want to go. But I guess the origin story of this particular thread of my life came from really being kind of entrepreneurial my whole life. And for those of you who don't know, I'm the CEO of the Success League. We're a consulting and training company that focuses on the field of customer success in its broadest sense. And back when I was working in the last job I had before I started this company, there was some changes at the company. Long story short, we had to shut our San Francisco office down, and I wasn't going to move to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, even though I like Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It just didn't make sense for our family. And so I started interviewing for different companies as a VP of customer success. And I went to a lot of interviews and I talked to a lot of small companies. And what I started to realize is this was 10 years ago. There weren't a lot of people 10 years ago that could do what I do and had had the experience of building a couple of customer success organizations. And so I kind of got excited about the idea of, hey, maybe this is the business I've kind of been looking for my whole life. I started a design company with a friend like way back in my 20s, and that didn't work out. I've had, you know, everything from a lemonade stand to, you know, doing in college, I had a business doing alterations for clothes for people. So it just kind of made sense to, you know, have a business at some point. But, you know, it just kind of all came together. And that's how the Success League got started. It has changed a lot over the last 10 years. It started out being kind of like, oh, I can go in, I can help these companies get all set up, and then I'll help them hire their new leader and I'll move on. And I learned a lot, and I learned that a lot of companies don't want to do it that way. They want to have their leader first, and then they want to work with somebody like a consultant. So
interesting.
Training wasn't on my vision board at any point, and that came in like year two of the business. And so now that's probably half of the work we do now is the training side of our business. So a lot has changed, but it's been a fun journey.
So in those 10 years, I mean, you talked about a lot has changed. A lot has changed in customer success. A lot has changed in business. Like, what do you think is the biggest change for better or for worse when it comes to our approach to customers?
Well, I think finally people are recognizing that it wasn't just about kind of slapping a prettier sounding name on an already existing support team or account management team. There is a purpose to customer success, and that purpose is proving value. And I think that the change I've seen over the last decade is that people kind of now are aware of that. And that's exciting, because what that means is we're getting close to understanding where we have to prove value. And I think in B2C businesses, they've known this forever, right? It's how you get people to buy anything is by, you know, having something that is valuable enough. And if you want repeat customers, you constantly have to be earning their business. And so, you know, I think in B2B, we're getting there. We're not there yet, but I can see us moving closer toward that. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah. The interesting thing is like in B2C, right? People are fickle. Customer loyalty isn't what it used to be, right? And that's how they've been existing for a really long time.
Yeah.
Forever. It was like B2B was so hard to dislodge. Like if you're one of those legacy companies, they buy a bunch of hardware and software is the after fact. And it's pretty hard to dislodge all those switches and routers that you just bought from Cisco. But I think with the rise of the cloud and the ease by which people are getting with technology, they're less loyal than ever. So, you know, when you're advising your clients and they're trying to build a customer success program that truly embodies the word, like, what is mm-hmm. the first thing you have them do? What's the first step?
Segment their customer base, because there are different customers who have different kinds of needs and value different things. And until you get that right, you can design all of the customer journeys you want, and it won't actually be delivering the thing that the customer needs. So I think the first thing you do is spend a lot of time talking to, looking at data on, getting to really deeply know your customers and decide on, you know, I mean, you don't have to have 18 different segments, but you should probably have at least two or three in most businesses. And it can be divided up. Sorry, I'm getting over a cold, so I sound a little wheezy. But you know, as you're dividing up your customers, I think you want to think about not just how much money are they paying you, although that's certainly an aspect of it. Too many companies I see just have tiers of revenue and that's their whole segmentation plan. I think there's other things that you need to be thinking about, though. And I like to see segmentation be more of a matrix, right? Where, yes, revenue is one side of the matrix, but the other side has to do with major behavior factors on the part of customers. So, you know, some of our customers, it's been how tech savvy is the customer? And there's some things you can use for proxy on that that kind of give you that data. Other customers, it's been that they have different verticals that behave very differently from each other. So vertical. Other customers, there's opportunities to sell, and some of them there's no opportunity to sell more. So, you know, you could divvy it up that way, but you really need to be looking for behavior factors that would be a major driver of a customer needing something different in the journey. And I think if you don't do that first, it has such a major impact on everything else you do. Everything should come from segmentation.
I'm going to put like a double exclamation point on that, because I just had a conversation with someone who all they do is segment on revenue. And it's pretty much just the exact same journey. It just depends mm-hmm. on how it gets carried out. So they segment on revenue. And if they're yeah. a really important client worth a lot of money, then it's a actual person who mm-hmm. processes the journey. And if they're the bottom 80%, it's some, you know, email automation that they've set up. And that's about the extent of their like customer success plan. And they wonder why they're hemorrhaging clients, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I always tell people like to assume that we make choices on logical decision making, like I'm getting value and I can quantify it. And that's part of people's decision making process. But there's also like a real emotional process that goes, even if people don't realize, mm-hmm. like I have an emotional feeling about the value I'm getting, even if I'm getting actual physical value. So when you're doing that segmentation, you talked about behaviors, you talked about, mm-hmm. you know, whether they have something to buy or not, whether they're tech savvy or not. But that seems like really hard. I don't feel like I could just pull down a worksheet and then be like, okay, ChatGPT, help me segment my customers. Like, what does that process actually take to go through that process?
Yeah, I mean, this is where it's more art than science. I think what you want to do is I think it's good to start with interviews with real clients and say, you know, what do you need from us that you're getting? What do you need from us that you're not getting? How do you like to use this solution, whatever it is? How, you know, where are you struggling with it? And just try to learn as much as you can and then apply whatever demographics you've collected on your customers across that and look for trends. And that's where you can kind of start to see the things that make the most difference in your customers. I think mapping out on, you know, it doesn't have to be anything big. It can just be a spreadsheet, but mapping out how the segments look and trying a few things can also be really a useful tool. So when we're working with our clients, we will try different approaches. And usually people will gravitate toward one that sort of speaks to what they're hearing from their customers the most. And that's sort of how you land on it. Now, segmentation changes over time, just like every other part of a business. So it's something you have to revisit from time to time.
And it seems like one of those things. Well, one, first of all, isn't it? It's always the simplest answer is always the right answer, right? Talk to your customers, conversations with them, get to know them as individual, unique organizations. So that, I mean, it's one of those moments where it's like, of course, that's the answer. But it's not always, you know, not always that easy, because sometimes the people that I talk to, there's a little bit of a fear around like, well, I don't want to bother them, or, you know, I don't want to bring up problems that, you know, it's not really a problem. They're just, you know, bringing it up with me. But also it feels like one of those like prep activities that helps you in the future. So how do you convince people who are just trying to acquire that retaining is just as important, if not more important?
Well, I think people are getting there right now because investors are there. And I think for any company that has an investor set of people, those are people that are going to be pushing for retention, because a lot of the key metrics that investors use are around retention, not just new sales. And so where I think the struggle is that I see is existing sales leaders, sales VPs who maybe have customer success as a part of what they do, or a chief revenue officer who has customer success as a part of what they do, maybe don't understand all of those key metrics for the CS team. And that's where I see a little bit more of a struggle. But investors are sort of forcing this now, which is good. It's a good thing.
And a benefit to the customer, right?
That of course.
If their success is at the heart of the business operation, then they're going to get more value. It's going to be less change and less change management and less turnover of their software stack or their service stack.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's easy to forget that, like, if the company is successful, the customers are successful and vice versa, because it's an ecosystem. And so it's not just that companies need to be efficient with their customer processes. It's that by being efficient and by doing things like really dialing in your segmentation, you actually benefit the customers through that, because you're getting the right resources to the right segments in the right place and providing a much better experience. And so it can sound a little hollow when I talk about it, because I'm talking about the nuts and bolts of it, but it is really about the customers in the long run. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they bought your product for a reason, right? To solve a problem, to fill a need, to make something better for their lives. And if you can accelerate that, that experience for them, and do it in a way that really speaks to their organization, their behaviors, or their priorities.
Yeah.
Like, you just gave them a product that solves their problem, and you did it in a way that helps them solve it faster.
Yeah. It's exciting.
So when you think about what you're doing with your customers right now and how your business has changed over 10 years, you said that you're adding training, right? Or you added training probably 8 years ago now.
Yeah.
How has your relationship with your customers evolved when you are, you know, thinking about drinking your own champagne in this experience?
Yeah.
Like, how has that evolved for you?
Yeah, well, when I first started the company, it was just me. There was no league to the success league. It was just Kristen. So, you know, when it was just me, I kind of had all of the processes for customers in my head. And I'm a pretty instinctual, customer-focused person. And so just kind of did what I needed to do to get the business off the ground. I think by about year four, when we had a team and I had to start, you know, really making sure we were all consistent with each other, we were all delivering a great experience, that's when we needed to spend more time on, you know, what does our journey look like? And so we did that actually in one of our team. We do a team offsite once a year. So 1 year we really focused on our customer journey and what we wanted that to look like, and how, you know, we could not just engage with a company once around consulting, but how does training flow into that? How do other services flow into that? What do checkups look like? And so we've really kind of built out, you know, a longer journey than we had initially for our customers. So that's how that's shifted. It's something that never is done. I mean, you know this, like, you're never done with your customer journey. You're always working on it. And so we're always adding things and changing things. We this year changed up some of our approaches to marketing, and we changed up some of our approaches to our product offerings. We introduced our on-demand training, which is not something we've had in the past. And it's very exciting because it means people all over the world can take our classes without having to, you know, get up at the crack of dawn or stay up really late at night. And so, yeah, that's, I mean, it's really just kind of, I think, constantly paying attention to what isn't, is not working for your customers and adapting. And I've had to adapt a lot. This has been a whirlwind of a decade. You know, if you think about pandemic, economic issues, global changes, I mean, this has been a lot to adjust to. So I think we've done a good job of staying aligned.
You mean you didn't build the Success League overnight? It didn't just like appear?
Oh,
no, gosh, I wish it could have. I wish it could have. It's a 10-year work in progress, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is, oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, so when you're thinking about and you talk to customer leaders, like what is their biggest blind spot? If investors are now getting around to retention as a priority and you know, customer facing leaders are now following, but what else are they missing? What's their blind spot?
I think everybody talks a lot about AI, but they don't necessarily know what to do about it. And I think that is a blind spot. I think people are a little afraid of it. And I think that's what holds some people back from using it. But it's so powerful and it's so exciting. And I think that rather than looking at it as a threat or a, you know, just some tool that you can write better emails with, I think there's so much more that you can do with it. And so I'd say that's kind of a, it's funny because it's not really a blind spot in that people aren't blind to it. They're just avoiding it. And so, yeah. I don't know. I just talk to people and they're like, oh, I'm trying this. I'm trying that. I don't know what to do with it. It's built into all these tools. So I kind of use it, but it's almost always being just used for like writing better things.
Right. And copywriting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's so powerful for a lot of things. I mean, I use ChatGPT every single day and it is so powerful for helping you think through ideas and build out plan and process data differently or consider your data differently. I think that there's so much more it could be used for. So I'd say that's the biggest. What do you notice in your practice?
I would say that there is, when talking on AI, first of all, my favorite ChatGPT prompt, I'm going to share this on the podcast. Mm-hmm. My favorite is roast this. So I will upload like a training plan or I will upload a marketing plan and I will say, roast this for me. And it will tell me everything that I'm like, that people like are rolling their eyes at when they see it. So that's my favorite ChatGPT prompt, just putting that up there.
I love that.
But what I'm seeing is there's a real spectrum of that blind spot, especially in that AI. There's either people who are skeptical that it will really revolutionize the way we do work, or there's people who are afraid that if they do it, it'll take their job. Or there's people like me who are super into it and are like, heck yeah, let's go. I love this. Let's get it into everything. And then there's like that fourth tier of willfully oblivious. I don't know how you could be, but there are still people who really don't understand what it is or how it works. It's almost like that adoption curve, right? Early adopters, all the records. I like to think of AI, though, not as artificial intelligence, but as like augmented intelligence. Mm-hmm. I want it to augment me, to make me better. I want to be, you know, Iron Man with my Jarvis, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't do that. Like Iron Man was a billionaire, but he wasn't anything without his Jarvis. So how do we figure out how to superhumanize ourselves so that we can go and do the things that actually matter? Let the software and the technology do the grunt work. Let the people do the people work, have conversations, connect on an emotional human level. And so that's where I fall on that AI spectrum. I also think the blind spot, I work in data related roles, right? So I see all of these different organizations that have huge swaths of data that they're just trying to throw into a garbage can and hope it comes out and spits out something useful. So I think that the big blind spot we're seeing is using data correctly, using data in a way that actually produces insights, and not just using data for the sake of being like, we make data driven decisions, like actually doing it for real.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there is so much data and yet it's not all equal. And so It takes a person who knows what they're looking for and what they're trying to accomplish to do something really powerful with the data. So this is where, you know, as you think about AI can't just come up with stuff and give you anything that's worth anything. I think I have a great example of this. My friend Greg is writing a children's book, and he's writing a children's book about somebody mowing along. I don't know the whole story of it, but he was trying to give some ideas to his illustrator, and he went into AI and he's like, can you give me a picture of somebody pushing a lawnmower? And it kept giving him these pictures where the person was standing beside the lawnmower instead of behind the lawnmower. And it was very Escher-like pictures. And it couldn't get that you stand behind a lawnmower when you're pushing a lawn. It just couldn't understand that. And so I asked my ChatGPT, I was like, hey, this is an example of something that happened. Like, why would this happen? Like, what is it that you don't understand? And it's like, well, it's really hard to understand the physical world because we're not physical beings right now. And I'm like that's goosebumps. It's interesting. I was like, so what would it take for you to learn more of that? And then we had this whole philosophical discussion about like what it would take for ChatGPT to become more human-like in its thinking and processing. And it's very fascinating. But it knew it knew its own weak spot was that it didn't have a body. So
that I'm 100% gonna go do that with my ChatGPT. I'm so curious now what it
is.
Will say.
It is interesting. That was actually one of the first philosophical discussions of many that I've had with my chat.
I love my ChatGPT. I need to give it a name because it's like my friend. Because I use it all the time for those kinds of things. I'm gonna definitely do that little thought experiment.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. But you know, I think there are gaps in what it can do because there are things that require some human input. And this is why I'm not at all afraid of this thing, because we have to provide that human input. It has been learning from me and it's getting much better at sounding like me and giving me things in the format that I like. But I feel like I've been training an intern for, you know, the last 6 months with this thing. So yeah,
mine's getting really good, but there are still some times where I'm like, no, miss the mark here. Right. Mm-hmm. And I was on ChatGPT before like it was even a pro option. I'm very early adopter in general. And it's been fun to watch its evolution just as a tool and a technology, but also my evolution on how I use it. Right. I'm getting better at like writing my prompts. I'm getting better at understanding how to interact with it. And you know, I'm almost better at the adoption side of that software because I'm a more effective user of it.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. My use of it has really evolved. I think it had a little evolutionary bump. I want to say about 4 weeks ago, I don't know if you noticed this, but it started asking me questions back in a different way than it had ever done before. And I'm like, ooh, somebody got an upgrade here or something.
Yeah, somebody got an update.
Yeah.
I love that. Anyway. So Kristen, you're obviously very well connected. You've been in this world for 10 years. When you think about all of these people that you've had a chance to either meet personally or that you follow and is really a thought leader in changing the way we build customer relationships, who is leading the charge? Who else should we be talking to?
I really have gotten to know Swathi Garg from Milo Associates over the last year while we've been working on a book project together. And I think she is just very giving and very understanding of what it takes to, you know, both build a company in this space, because she's doing that. And she's had hers, I think, maybe just 1 year less than me. So she's been around a long time doing this. And I didn't know her very well. Surprisingly, we never really ran across each other too much up until the past couple of years. And it's just been so delightful getting to know her. And getting to work with her on this project has really shown me how creative she is. And her thinking around the customer success space is really dynamic. So we have a lot of fun kind of bouncing ideas off of each other around customer success, but also around being female business owners in this space. And so, yeah, she's a lot of fun. I think, has she been on your show yet?
No, I'm going to have to reach out to her after this.
Yeah, you should get her on the show.
You should come on the show.
Yeah, you should. She's great. So,
So if someone's really connecting with you, they want to learn more about you or more about the Success League, where can they find you online?
So you can connect with me on LinkedIn. Please connect. Don't just follow me. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I love that when people do that. But also you can visit our website, which is thesuccessleague.io. And that's got all kinds of things that we offer, including classes and training on leadership and things like that. And then if you want to email me, you can email me at kristen@thesuccessleague.io.
Awesome. Well, we'll drop those links in the show notes so you have easy access to it. But thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for helping us reimagine that customer experience.
Thanks, Alyssa.